here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing?
Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show, A Dad's Point of View, with my honored and very special guest, Stan the Man Lee. Stan, as you probably well know, is the king of Marvel Comics. He helped create, or did create, Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, X-Men, the Incredible Hulk, and so many more. So, Stan, you appear in every single movie, every Marvel movie, and you also cameo, it seems, left and right. My son called me into the TV the other day, and not into the TV, but into our TV room, and said, Dad, there's Stan Lee. And I don't remember what show it was, but there you were.
It might have been The Big Bang Theory, or it might have been Nikita.
That's what it was. It was Nikita. It was Nikita.
Yeah.
There's
another show called Eureka, which it isn't out yet, but any day now you'll see a cameo in that. I think that's on the Sci-Fi Channel.
You know, the problem is you're just not out there enough, Stan.
I love doing it. I'm waiting for the Television Academy and the movie, the Oscar Academy, to declare the best cameo of the year. I hope to get a prize in both of them.
Well, no, I think it should be the best multiple cameos of the year. You know, I have
to. Well, that's what I meant. The most cameos, not necessarily the best.
Well, you're always marvelous, and I actually every Marvel movie, I can't wait to see you. And sometimes your appearance is very subtle, so I will always nudge my kids. There's Stan. Because it's so much fun. I got to tell you a story. I don't know if you remember, but you and I have known each other for at least 20 years.
Right.
I was a fan long before I ever got in showbiz, long before I ever had the pleasure of meeting with you, long before the dream of actually working with you came true. And we worked together, as you know, at New World, and we got the first TV movie of the X-Men up on the air. And I think at that time I told you and Avi Arad, if you remember, that I'm going to get a TV movie on the air before you guys get any of those big-budget features on the
air. That's right. I remember.
And we did. Unfortunately, it wasn't the best execution of the movie because New World wasn't giving us the kind of money you eventually got to make all those great big-budget features. But
right.
I did get you on the air with the first live-action X-Men movie. And we knew each other, and you were gracious enough. There was this wonderful Marvel poster that was called the Marvel Universe. I don't know if it was ever available to the public, but it was about 4 feet or 5 feet square. Do you know the poster I'm talking about?
Sure.
And I got a hold of that poster. I don't know. Somebody at Marvel gave it to me. And of course, the poster would not be complete if I didn't have Stan Lee autograph it. And you gave me this great autograph, said something like, to my super idol, Bruce Allen, Excelsior, Stan Lee, and Excelsior, of course, being one of your many signature words. And I had it framed prominently in my office. And my boys, when I left New World and you and I lost touch for a while, were very young. So they really had no memory of ever meeting you. And I think they did, but they were, you know, 1 and 4 years old. And 10 years later, when they were like 11 and 14, I took them to the San Diego Comic-Con. And as it happened, you were appearing. I don't know if you remember this. And you and I had not seen each other in like 10 years.
Yeah.
And my friendship with you was sort of an urban legend in the Salen family home. And we go to the Comic-Con, and the kids dressed up in their Star Wars costumes, which they were into at the time. And no, Star Trek. They had Star Trek shirts.
Right.
And you were going to give autographs, and it was limited to 40 people. And as luck would have it, I got the 40th ticket. And of course, when you arrived, as happens at any of these conventions, it is like the president has arrived. There is a entourage that's unbelievable. You are surrounded by everybody there. You are the star of every Comic-Con. I don't care what other media celebrity is there. So, you know, I couldn't get up to you. You and I hadn't made eye contact or seen each other in 10 years. So I waited in line with my two boys. We had bought Spider-Man number one, the great one, that the reissue one. What was the great artist on that had the great cover that was black and silver?
It might have been John Romita.
No, I don't think it was John Romita.
Steve Ditko?
No, it wasn't Ditko
either. Jack Kirby?
No, it was newer. It was a guy who went off and did Image, I believe.
Todd McFarlane?
Yes, yes, thank you. I knew we'd get it.
I'd get to it sooner or later. He's a good friend of mine and a very talented guy.
Unbelievably talented. And you recall Marvel came out with all these different covers. Well, when we knew we were going to see you, because we didn't know that at the time, and we didn't know if we'd get a ticket, we ran around the convention. We found one of those. And so now I'm standing in line with my two boys, who are 14 and 11 approximately, and we're waiting in line to see you. The throngs are overwhelming. And finally, we get up there. And I told my boys, I used to work with Stan Lee. And my boys didn't believe it. Now, even though I had that poster in which you were signing it, they didn't know if it was real. So we finally get up there. And, of course, you had to be overwhelmed with all the attention that was being focused on you. So I go, hi, Stan, it's Bruce. And you look at me for a moment. And you didn't recognize me at first, probably because I looked older while you didn't. And my boys are looking up, and there's that pregnant pause where they're thinking, oh my God, our dad has lied to us all these years. And then, of course, you recognize me, and a big grin breaks out on your face, and you go, Bruce, how you been? The boys relax, we smile, we got to chat for a minute or two. And thankfully, Stan, you saved my life at that moment.
That's quite a story.
I don't know if you remember that, but it was a great moment for us. And we framed that comic. It's still in our house. And in fact, that Marvel poster I talked about is also prominently in our house, along with when you had offices in Ventura, another one of your mini incarnations, you graciously signed individual comics to each of my boys, which we've also framed.
Well, that's very generous of me, but I was really worried about the poster and the other thing. I was afraid you were going to say that it cost you so much to have it framed and I owe you that money.
Well, I will send you the bill now that you mention it. But listen, Stan, my show, I don't know if you've actually fully aware of what I've been doing. I'm no longer in the end of showbiz that you know me from, which was making television movies and series.
Right.
I now write a column about families and dads, and primarily I write a column and do a radio show, which is called A Dad's Point of View. And I talk about dads and parenting and boys and men's issues and all that stuff. And I have to believe that you are well aware that what you did with Marvel had a big impact, certainly in the world of comic books, let alone elsewhere, in how parents, teenagers were portrayed in that world. And I wonder if you'd like to talk about that, because I think it was so different in how you did it with Peter Parker and all the other characters. How you portrayed them and how you portrayed their relationships with parents. And I think it goes back to being real is really what you did.
Well, the one thing I tried to do was just try to portray teenagers as real people with all of the problems that they have, with all of the things that bother them and the things they aspire to. And when I did Peter Parker, I remember telling my publisher at the time that I didn't want him to be a real super type of guy. I want him to be an ordinary kid who lives with his widowed aunt and they don't have enough money and he worries about her because she's rather elderly and he tries to get jobs outside of school so he can help her pay the rent and so forth. And he's not the most popular kid in town and he's not the world's greatest athlete. I wanted a character that the other readers could relate to, and I wanted him to be a good guy. Luckily, it seems to have caught on.
Well, it's more than caught on. It is truly, as my introduction talked about, it's been a phenomenon for decades. What would you say would be some of the lessons that parents and kids might derive from Marvel Comics and the characters, and for that matter, the movies?
Well, of course, you must understand, I was basically just trying to write exciting stories that people would want to read. But if there was any underlying theme, I would say that the one theme was that we shouldn't dislike other people because they're different, because we're all different from somebody. And the X-Men is a good example. I mean, they were mutants, so the normal people feared them and hounded them and oppressed them. And I tried to show that variety is the great thing in the world, and we're all different, and we should respect each other's differences.
Well, your timing was obviously very propitious in the sense that all these characters came out as the whole country was rocking and reeling from racial strife and changes in the 60s.
Yeah.
Did you have long hair in those days?
Did I what?
Did you have long hair in those days?
Well, longer than it is now. No, I didn't have very long hair, no. I know what you mean. I didn't have hippie long hair.
Did you find the hippie movement and the Love Generation and all that, did that greatly impact Marvel in any way or the other way around?
Well, I can't speak for the whole company, but it didn't really impact me. The funny thing is, I find if you write stories that have sort of universal values and that speak of universal truths, so to speak, and I hope I'm not sounding too pompous, but if you write that type of stuff, it's good in the 60s or the 70s or the 80s or now, or those things never change. The relationship of children to their parents, of husbands and wives, of good guys and bad guys, those things don't change. It doesn't matter when you're writing the story.
I think you're completely correct. That's why I never run out of material for my writing now, because family issues and parental issues, they're nonstop. And one, you know, it's funny, as much as you always wrote, to quote yourself just now, exciting stories, and that was your goal, I don't know why, but maybe it's something that was always there in me, which is partly why I'm now doing what I'm doing now. But I always enjoyed the personal stories in Marvel Comics as much as I enjoyed the action. I really loved Peter Parker's personal life, and I was always kind of rooting for Mary Jane over Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a secret. I love writing the personal part much better than I love writing the action. Any story that I dreamed up, the first thing I would think of is what will be the personal problem or the interesting personal relationship that I can bring to the story. And once I had that worked out, I'd throw in the action fight scenes. That stuff was easy, but it was the personal things that I was interested in myself.
Well, I think that, again, is what differentiated Marvel from the rest of the comic world. Was the dimensionality of the writing and the characters. It's funny. I do have another story I have to share with you. I read Marvel comics. I started with DC, as a lot of people did. I used to go to my grandparents' house, and there was a local drugstore, and my parents would drop me off early, and I'd go to that drugstore, and I'd sit on the floor, and I'd read the comics there with the owner giving me a sour look because he was wondering, of course, whether I was going to buy any. And in those days, I read mostly Superman and Batman. And then later, when I got into my teens, I started reading Spider-Man, and he became, of course, my favorite character, as most people have, you know, love Spider-Man among their favorite characters. Daredevil became probably my second favorite, and I followed Spider-Man all through college. I don't know which issue it was, but I was completely wrapped up in Spider-Man. And when you did something, and I don't know if this was the first time any comic book ever did this, but when you killed Gwen Stacy, I was so heartbroken. This is true, Stan, honest to God. I was so heartbroken, I didn't read a comic for a few years.
Well, believe it or not, I was too. It even affected me.
Was that the first time a major character was legitimately killed, not to be resurrected in some foolish, naive way, the way they did with Superman?
Yeah. As far as I know, yes.
I mean, you talk about taking real one step further.
Well, again, wanted to keep it realistic.
Well, it's been a joy having you on the show, Stan.
Likewise, I've enjoyed talking to you. It's been so long since I've done that, and you're really a great guy, and you're a great interviewer, too.
Well, thank you, and good luck with your new adventures, and it's been a pleasure. This is the Bruce Salin Show with the great Stan the Man Lee.
Excelsior.
Indeed.
I'll see you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Just in time, Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Wealth and fame, he's ignored. Action is his reward to him. Life is a great big pain. Wherever there's a hang, you'll find a Spider-Man.